Introduce yourself, please.
Good morning. I'm State Representative Randy Dunn, representing the 23rd District in Missouri.
Excellent. Let's get started.
This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go. We have gathered here in the production studio at KCUR 89.3. I am Brian Ellison, and it is good to have Representative Randy Dunn with us. He is sharing in donuts, even though he swore he would not when he first walked in. We tempted him. We led him astray. Was it worth it?
It was worth it.
Okay, that's what I'm glad to hear. He's not the only one here, though. We're also joined by Tricia Bushnell, who is legal director at the Midwest Innocence Project. Welcome to you, Tricia.
Thank you. Good morning.
And also Barb Shelley, who is a columnist and editorial writer from the Kansas City Star. Welcome, Barb.
Thanks. Good morning.
Glad you're here. They, I'm sure, have many questions, but we always start with the same one, which is to have you tell us, Randy Dunn, about your family and pets.
Well, I have two older brothers, three great nephews, and about 25 guppies.
Guppies?
Yes.
Wow. And what are their names?
I don't have names for them.
No names. All
no
right.
Names.
Well, maybe we can come up with some. Over the course of the show, we'll develop a list and see if we can share it at the end. Tell us a little bit about your district. You're a Democrat. You represent Kansas City. What parts of Kansas City?
Yes, the 23rd District is parts of downtown, the historic 18th and Vine Jazz District, and the Old Northeast and East Sides of Kansas City.
Any particular issues that your particular district is dealing with right now?
A lot of the issues impacting my district are really dealing with jobs and employment. Unemployment rates are significantly higher in the 23rd District than they are in Kansas City at large. So that is one of the primary issues that we are trying to address, as well as lack of economic development.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about a lot of issues today, maybe some of those. Big votes happening in the legislature this week, and also, of course, work on the budget and on higher ed. But we're going to start by going around the table and seeing what's on the mind of our guests. Let's start with you today, Barb. What are you thinking about?
Well, I'm thinking about the Missouri legislature and the budget that's working its way through. And I was actually hoping that Representative Dunn could enlighten us a little about what's going on with the school finance formula.
Good question. We talk a lot about school finance on the Kansas side, but this
yes.
is an issue in Missouri as well. What's going on, Randy?
We have in Missouri, unfortunately, continually underfunded education as it relates to the Education Formula Foundation. And unfortunately, the proposed budget this year, once again, is underfunding education severely from where it should be. There have been attempts and proposals within the governor's budget to increase funding. But it's still not to the level of where it should be. And that's a real concern for me and a real concern for a lot of my colleagues as well. But it is difficult, when we look at the overall budget in terms of where we would get that money to be able to really fully fund the Formula Foundation to where it should be.
It kind of looks like there's a proposal to actually alter the formula so that it looks like it's funded, but you'd be required to put less money into it.
Yeah, and that's all. It's really smoke and mirrors.
Uh-huh.
Like you said, it changes the formula, but at the end of the day, it would be less money going towards education than it currently is.
Can you say more about that? What's the smoke? What's the mirrors? How does it change how it looks without actually putting more money in?
Essentially, what it would do is show money coming from different places where it looks like it's being funded fully, and changing sort of the thresholds for certain funding elements. But at the end of the day, as Barb said, it's less money going to education as opposed to more money.
Yeah, I see.
From what I've read, Brian, and just like all school finance things, it's incredibly complicated.
Right.
But there used to be a 5% cap on spending growth on education in Missouri, and that was lifted in 2012 because they thought they were going to be getting a windfall from gaming. The windfall didn't happen, but now there's no cap, and so that's kind of made the formula grow, as I understand it. Like I say, it's very tricky.
Interesting. Yeah. You're a member of the House Select Committee on the Budget.
Yes.
That was not the only vote this week of significance. They're not the only issue. One of the main issues was about higher education, actually, and about funding for the University of Missouri. By a vote of 20-5, the committee voted to reduce funding for the University of Missouri by almost $8 million. You were one of the five who voted no. How come?
The reasoning behind that cut, I felt, was unnecessary. A lot of the folks who were in support of that cut really were supporting it because they did not like the way that the university dealt with a lot of the protests that have taken place on campus over the last couple of months. And I think that is absolutely the wrong reasoning for us to be cutting funding to an institution of higher education, particularly when students at this time are dealing with college costs that are, getting higher and higher and burdening them for many years after they complete their education. And that is the wrong reasoning for us to be cutting funding for education.
You know, I've been hearing from other state legislators that there's a lot of anger in Jefferson City about what happened at Mizzou, talking about Professor Melissa Click, or talking about the fact that the football team got involved last fall. Where is all of the anger about that coming from in the legislature? Why do they care so much?
I think part of it is that folks don't want to fess up to the issue of racism that has been plaguing the university for decades. And now that the veil has been lifted, we have to confront it head on. And a lot of people are afraid to do that. But honestly, I really think that that is a significant part of the reason that a lot of people have been fighting against the university at this point.
The cuts that were approved, at least at the committee level this week, were focused at the university administration, the system administration. We should note here, probably, if at this point that this is produced by KCUR, this podcast, which is under the a license from the University of Missouri, Kansas City. It's editorially independent, but we should mention that. Randy, what will that look like for those cuts to take effect? What's the impact of cutting $8 million from system administration? Is it going to affect life on these campuses, the very things that the legislators are concerned about?
I think it will. And that $8 million cut is nearly 50% of the administration budget for the UM system. And a large part of that is people. So what does that mean? That means that people will be laid off and the jobs that those individuals are doing will be eliminated. And so that certainly will have a rippling effect, I think, throughout the campuses. Additionally, we have a new chancellor at Mizzou, as well as an interim director for the UM system. And it really ties their hands to be able to implement a lot of the changes that we as the legislature are saying that we want to see happening. But by restricting those funds and cutting those funds, it makes it much more difficult for them to be able to carry out the things that we're saying that we want them to do.
Can I speak to that, too? What the legislature is threatening to cut is not the only shortfall that the university system's looking at, is it? Their enrollment is down. I think a lot of universities are looking at lower enrollment next year for demographic reasons and other reasons. And what happened last fall at Mizzou may be impacting them even more. And then they're taking a hit with donations, alumni donations and things. Everybody's angry for one reason or another. And now the legislature's talking about another $8 million cut. And, it's just you have to wonder if they're really sitting back and looking at the effect of handcuffing their major university system like this.
And Barbara, I think you're absolutely right. I think some people are being very short-sighted with the decisions that they're making as it relates to some of these funding cuts and not looking long-term at the impacts that will have. And again, because of we know that there is likely going to be a reduction in the number of students that are going to be coming to the university, which means a reduction in total receipts to the university from the tuition that's being paid by those students. There are going to be some real issues that we're going to have to address as it relates to that. And cutting funding is certainly not the way to address that.
Exactly. And can I also say that I was a little aghast to hear the Senate president say that they wouldn't be taking up the matter of nominees for the Board of Curators. There's three empty positions there. You know, like you mentioned, you have an interim system president, and they're embarking on a search for a new system president. Why would anyone want to be the system president when you don't know who a third of your bosses are going to be? That doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And on top of that, a lot of concern has been raised about the nature of the board that remains. The six remaining curators do not have any people of color at a time when issues of race are very much before the university's conversations. Do you have any thoughts about that? You're a member of the relatively small Missouri Legislative Black Caucus. What do you make of that, Randy?
Yeah, and that has been a real concern for us as members of the Missouri Legislative Black Caucus, and something that we have had conversations with Dr. Middleton, the interim president, about. And, you know, that brings a lot of concern for us in terms of making sure that there is adequate representation on the Board of Curators who is culturally sensitive to the needs of the students of color that are there on campus. And I think to not have individuals on the Board of Curators in the Senate saying that they are, you know, not going to, you know, fill those seats. Once again, we are tying the hands of those individuals who are trying to bring about positive change on the campus that is woefully needed. And I think that's reckless, and it's really dangerous to be playing those sort of political games when it comes to this.
You know, for a lot of weeks we've been asking questions about Mizzou, but having to acknowledge that the legislature really doesn't have a lot of actual oversight of the university because the Board of Curators is responsible for that. This week was the first week where we saw, oh yes, there is this one way that the legislature can have a pretty profound impact on the university, which is with dramatic budget cuts.
Yes.
I know Tricia Bushnell hasn't gotten to ask her first question yet here. Jump in.
Well, I think actually one of my questions for you just ties in really nicely. You're talking about funding for education. And I think about it, you know, I work in the criminal justice field, how often education and lack of funding for that leads to problems for us on the criminal justice side. And one of the questions that I was wondering about is recently the state public defender wrote a really large piece, an op-ed, about the lack of funding in Missouri for the state public defender. And actually there's been, I think, four or five DOJ reports. We're ranked 49th out of 49 criminal defense systems because it's underpaid and underfunded. And I'm curious what's happening in the legislature to fix that or address that need.
That's an excellent question. And that has been a problem that has also been going back for many years. In this year's budget, the Public Defender's Office made a request for an increase of $25 million in the budget. The governor recommended $1.5 million. And in the budget committee that we just voted on, we recommended an increase of $4 million, which still does not get us to where the Public Defender's Office has requested and certainly needs to be. But it is at least moving us, I think, in the right direction. My hope is that the governor will maintain the increase that we are recommending out of the budget and that he does not withhold the funds as he has done in past years.
Has there been any discussion about what would that mean in comparison to sort of other cities like in New Orleans where public defenders are shutting down and they're having to litigate this funding issue? Has that been something that anyone's ever been talking about?
You know, honestly, that has not been a huge point of conversation in the legislature, which is a real concern and a real problem. You know, like you said, you look at what's happening down there in Louisiana and, you know, the possibility of those offices having to shut their doors here in Missouri, you know, with the potential threat of, you know, lawsuits as it relates to our public defenders not being able to have the adequate time to really work with their cases and their clients that they're working with. And so this is a conversation that needs to be happening more of, but unfortunately it has not been seen to be a real priority for a lot of the members in the legislature.
Let's talk about another big bill that passed this week, the so-called Paycheck Protection Bill. Passed both the House and the Senate with veto-proof but just barely veto-proof majorities. Probably will be vetoed. It's unclear whether all those votes would hold in an override effort. But this on the heels of last year's right-to-work bill. This is a bill that would prevent state employees from having their checks be subject to automatic fee reduction but for to support unions. Is Missouri becoming a state that is bad for organized labor in light of the continued effort for a right-to-work bill, in light of this bill? Is organized labor in trouble in Missouri?
You know, I hate to say, but yes, they are. We have continually seen attacks on working families and unions over the last years. You know, the past couple of years, it was right-to-work legislation that was continually being pushed. And I think we have seen sort of across the country where right-to-work has not been successful. They've sort of moved on from that and are now really pushing paycheck deception. And that is exactly what we're seeing here in Missouri, just another way to try to attack the unions and to, at some point, you know, really what their goal is to dismantle the unions.
Paycheck protection, paycheck deception. I guess it's all a matter of perspective.
Exactly.
What do you think when you hear that, Tricia? You're a voter.
You know, I'm actually just really fascinated as to your perspective on how these things catch the legislators' attention, just in the various degrees. You talked a little bit about the reaction to what was happening in Missouri and now that there are laws that are being enacted for that. And I think about, you know, what is it that's driving this issue to bring legislators to look at that? And particularly when I think about how Ferguson was a big deal, but we still haven't seen any legislation that's been passed as a reaction to that. So I'm interested in what your perspective is on how these issues grab the legislators' attention to attack those particular aspects.
I think there are a couple sort of national organizations. On the conservative side, the primary one is referred to as ALEC. And a lot of the legislation that we see really comes down and is sort of pushed down from ALEC. And then we also have there are a lot of big dollar donors who give to a lot of these individuals, and some of these legislators essentially are doing their bidding. And that's a real issue and a concern as well, particularly in a state where we have no contribution limits here in Missouri. And so those are the two ways that I see a lot of this legislation really coming down, is through these national organizations and through big dollar donors.
And let me push back a little bit on that, though. And clearly there is legislation that is drafted by outside groups like ALEC. Clearly there is a philosophy or an ideological bent that is driving Republican legislators to support that legislation. But isn't it also true that there are a significant number of union members who do support this kind of legislation, who would like to see their paychecks not drafted for union dues? Isn't it true that there are some pretty compelling financial arguments that that businesses will make that say something like a right-to-work bill is better for big business and big development coming to a state?
I think you could certainly make those arguments, but when you look at the real facts, the states that are right-to-work states have higher unemployment rates. Their average salaries for individuals is considerably lower than those states that are not right-to-work states. And so those are some of the issues and concerns and reasons why myself and members of the minority party and some members of the majority party as well have been fighting these attacks against unions. You know, and so it really makes it difficult, you know, for us when we're looking at trying to make some of these changes. You know, you have big business that says, yes, this is good for us, but it's not good for their workers. And there are always, I think, going to be folks who may be a part of the unions who may disagree politically with, you know, the leaders. However, again, I can speak for myself. I have not received one email or phone call from any of my constituents saying, I want you to support right to work, or I want you to support paycheck protection. I've received zero, but I have received numerous emails and phone calls from constituents saying, please fight against this.
Well, maybe you're saying that on this podcast will bring in some emails, although perhaps not. You mentioned before the show that you live in something like a 90% Democratic district. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. So perhaps there's not going to be many emails after all. Barb Shelley, what else is on your mind today?
Yeah, well, one thing that I know is moving actually past the House was the prescription drug monitoring program. You know, as we know, Missouri's the only state in the nation that doesn't have this. It's a database where you can kind of see what prescriptions people are getting. And it, you know, we have this big opioid epidemic now, and it helps you see, you know, what physicians might be overprescribing and what citizens may be just collecting this either because they're addicted themselves or they're selling these to other people who are addicted and whatever.
This is a database that pharmacists and other physicians would have access to for safety reasons. Most.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, for safety reasons. And every other state has it. And the border states in Missouri are saying, do this. You know, this is killing us because, you know, people are coming to Missouri and buying this stuff and taking it to Kentucky or wherever and selling it. It has passed the House, and I'd be interested to know what Representative Dunn thinks the prospects are in the Senate this year, because that's where the holdup's been, hasn't it?
It has been. I remain cautiously optimistic that we'll be able to get it through this legislative session. You know, oftentimes it takes bills three or four times before they finally get passed. And I think people are finally starting to really understand the importance of this type of legislation and why we need it and why we should not be the one state in the country that does not have this. And so I remain cautiously optimistic. I know for those that are opposed to it, they feel like this is sort of an opening for the federal government to come in and intrude on their rights and those sort of things. However, when you talk to the families of individuals who may have overdosed on prescription drugs, this far outweighs any of those concerns. And this is really good legislation that we should be passing. So we aren't dealing with those issues here in Missouri, and the states surrounding us aren't being bombarded with the issues of folks coming into Missouri and illegally, you know, taking those drugs back to their home states.
So I read somewhere, and it's been a while, that possibly the Senate would pass legislation putting this on the ballot and having citizens vote on whether we want it or not. Is that still kicking around?
There oftentimes that conversation is happening. And oftentimes when it comes to some of these difficult votes, I think there are some who would like to sort of punt away their responsibility and put it on the voters. But I think we need to have a backbone and we need to be taking the votes on these issues that are really important to us and our constituents and our state.
Okay. I've thought of a couple of names for some of your guppies. Cautious. An optimistic should be the first two.
Okay. All right.
Alec is another one that has potential, I think.
I don't know about that one.
So that's three. We've got 22 left to name. Trisha Bushnell, what else are you thinking about today?
You know, I'm thinking a lot about, you talked about these bills that it takes many years to get enacted after they've been introduced a lot. And one of the bills that's been on my radar simply because of the work that I do is a bill from Senator Keaveney, which has been introduced for the last several years, asking for reform on eyewitness identification procedures. And what that would do is it would require when an officer is doing a lineup, for example, that they not know who they're looking for, that it be double blind, that it doesn't use these mechanisms that we know are suggestive. But every year, it never makes it past committee. And I'm just wondering, you know, what is it that needs to be done to put these on people's radar, or what needs to be done just to get movement?
We should note that Trisha knows what she's talking about here. She teaches a class on the fundamentals of investigation at UMKC Law School, right?
That's right.
All right. So what of that?
So Senate Bill 842 is Senator Keaveney's bill this year. And once again, it has been stuck in committee. He had a hearing on February 9th in the Judiciary Committee of the Senate. But there has been no movement on it since. And I think part of the issue is folks just don't understand really the importance of this type of legislation. And I always believe that it's beneficial to have folks come down there and talk directly to their legislators about the importance of legislation, how it's impacting them, the number of individuals in their respective district that it may have an impact on. So that way they can become more educated on that issue and hopefully push them in the direction of supporting positive legislation that is going to have a impact on the lives of folks here in our state.
Well, if I can just offer a fun fact for you to know of how important this is, you know, we have nine DNA exonerations in Missouri, and every single one of them, 100%, was a misidentification by a witness. You know, to the extent that you have any suggestions of how we can get people to think about that, we were always open to it. Simply in the same way that I'm curious of how the legislator is going to at all respond to Ferguson, or if you ever think that that's going to happen.
You know, under our previous speaker, on the first day of session, he said that we will not have a Ferguson agenda as a legislature. And I think that has sort of continued under the leadership of our current speaker.
What did that mean? How did you hear that? What did he mean by that?
What I heard is that any bill dealing with whether it be police body cameras or anything that really can try to address the issues that have been plaguing Ferguson and communities like Ferguson, where there are strains between the community and the police, that there was not going to be any focus or the ability for any bills addressing that to make it through the legislative process. And that has held true up to this point. There has been no movement on any bills of substance that would really address the issues of social justice, criminal justice reform, and or helping to ameliorate the relationships between the community and the police.
One last thing I'd like to ask Barb Shelley about. It's actually old news. It's last week's news. But Barb, you reported on this for The Star. You wrote about it. And that is something that I think Representative Dunn, who is actually a law school student part-time right now, would really appreciate a bill that would actually give anyone who completes one term in the legislature a special privilege, right?
Yeah, you might want to rethink paying that tuition and doing all that work to get your law degree, because maybe you can just be a lawyer anyway. You know, every now and then something just really wacky pops up in the Missouri legislature.
Like every other day,
well,
or so. Right?
At least every other week. But the latest one was by Representative Ross of Somerville, Missouri. And he proposed that if you serve 2 years in the Missouri legislature, that would qualify you to practice law. And not only that, it would also qualify you to be a judge in Missouri. Mm. And this, you know, produced a great deal of hilarity on Twitter.
Yes.
Or terror.
And elsewhere. Right? Or terror. There was even a hashtag called Moleg Degrees. And, you know, well, you know, I fed my cat this morning. Does that make me a veterinarian?
Right.
And things like that.
Former guest on this program, Representative Jeremy Lefevre, tweeted that if he'd really like a special degree to be an astronaut.
Yeah. He loves that stuff.
Yeah.
He gets into a theme like that. I don't think it's going anywhere, do you think?
It's not going to go anywhere.
You've signed on as a lead sponsor.
No, I have not.
Okay,
let
sorry,
me be clear. I have not signed on. But no, that bill's not going to go anywhere. And Representative Ross, really, his filing of that bill was to sort of try to really tick off some of the attorneys in the legislature. One of our other colleagues had filed a bill that would allow for attorneys to continue as they have been to be able to do surveys of land. And Representative Ross, that's what he does for a profession. And he felt like the attorneys were sort of intruding into his space as a land surveyor. And so he filed this bill to sort of
Fascinating.
Put a finger in the eye.
I never knew why you did that
either.
I didn't either. There's the rest of the story.
We've made news.
Is that your next legal class, surveying of land?
We'll see.
One other bill that's gotten some attention this week, perhaps actually more serious, but on at least as fun a topic, which is beer. The Senate passed by a very narrow margin, the beer cooler bill that would allow grocery stores to have leased beer fridges, basically dispensing draft beer in growler-sized containers. Lots of support from big beer, like InBev, Anheuser-Busch. Opponents say it would hurt local craft brewers. This was one of the closest votes we've seen. It was cross-party lines in the state Senate this year. Where do you come down on the great beer fridge debate, Representative Dunn?
I don't know yet, honestly. I have not made up my mind on where I'm going to be on that yet. I've not received any feedback one way or the other from my constituents. We'll see where I end up on that. But I have not made up my mind at this point.
Any of our other guests want to weigh in on big beer?
I'm kind of liking this sort of resurgence of the craft beers and things, especially around here in Kansas City. So I probably me personally, go with the smaller brewers.
You're going to oppose the beer cooler bill.
Maybe, yeah, but I'm pushing like him. I haven't quite made up my mind.
Okay, well, that's fair. Yeah. You want to keep your electoral options open.
Exactly.
I understand. Yeah. Tricia Bushnell?
You know, sadly, I have celiac disease, which means I cannot drink either of those versions of beer, but I support individuals having their right to choose their beer. So,
Tricia Bushnell is pro-choice with regard to beer. Thank you to Tricia Bushnell of the Midwest Innocence Project for joining us this week.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also Barb Shelley, the Kansas City Star. Great to see you, Barb.
It's always fun.
And thank you, of course, to Representative Randy Dunn for joining us, Democrat of Kansas City. It's been great to have you here.
Thank you, Brian. This has been great as well.
Now, we always try to learn one last thing about you here at the end of the podcast, which is to ask you what song is on your mind right now. That's how we're going to end the podcast. So pick a song that you like, maybe a song that says something about Missouri or just something about you.
I think Adele's Hello is still kind of stuck in my mind right now. So that's kind of my song of choice right now.
I think everyone can agree that hello is a good way for us to say goodbye. Thank you so much for being here. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can find us on iTunes or on kcur.org/statehouseblend. If you use Twitter, do you use Twitter?
I do.
You do use Twitter. He's what is your Twitter handle, Randy?
It is @MoRepDunn.
Do you want to give your Twitter handles around the table, Tricia?
Sure. Mine is Tcita, which is @TCITA.
And?
B. Shelley.
Very good. That's a great way to keep up on the show. And the news from Jeff City and Topeka as well. I'm @PTSBrian. You can follow my co-host, Sam Zeff, @SamZeff. We also try to use the hashtag StateHouseBlend. You can find a shorter version of us on the air on Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date at 11 a.m. here on KCUR 89.3. And if you have any other thoughts or to be on the show as one of our citizen guests like Tricia was today, shoot me an email. I'm Brian at KCUR.org. We're going to edit that. If you have any other thoughts or to be on the show as one of our citizen guests like Tricia was today, shoot me an email, Brian@KCUR.org. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll see you next time.